Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
Theodora Ross was born into a family stalked by cancer. Before she finished her education, she had an aunt, an uncle, both parents, a sister, and a brother diagnosed with different forms of the disease. But perhaps afraid of what she would learn, she put off tests for cancer-linked mutations until she was diagnosed with an unexpected melanoma, despite the fact that she herself had been practicing medicine for years. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. All of this is to say that Ross absolutely understands why so many people who suspect their genes may doom them to cancer are reluctant to be tested. But she's come to the conclusion that it's better to know than to wonder, because advanced knowledge allows patients a chance to take action before they get sick. Dr. Theodora Ross is professor of internal medicine and director of the cancer genetics program at the Harold C. Simmons Comprehensive Cancer Center at UT Southwestern Medical Center. Her new book is called A Cancer in the Family: Take Control of Your Genetic Inheritance. Theo, welcome to Think.
Hi, Chris.
So none of this is abstract for you. Your family has been deeply affected by cancer, but it didn't make it easy for you to decide to seek out testing to determine your own risk.
Correct. Part of it is when I was training, the area of cancer genetics was really embryonic. And when we found the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes, we didn't know what to do. When we found that they were broken, we didn't know whether what we would do for the patients. And so people would say, well, why would I want to know? And I think there are a lot of other diseases. You start thinking about neurologic diseases, cardiac diseases. People will say, well, what can I do? Back in the 90s, that was just back in the 90s. Actually, cancer genetics began much earlier than that, obviously with Mendel probably. But there were just a few researchers. Henry T. Lynch is considered the father of cancer genetics. But there was also Lee Inframini back in the 60s, where they had families that clearly had cancer running throughout multiple generations of the family, and they thought there was a gene, but they hadn't identified them. So, it was kind of a, we know something, it's an interesting science, but what are we going to do about it? And people like my sister, she had breast cancer, she died when she was 38, she was diagnosed at 35, she didn't know what hit her, and nobody knew what hit her, so there was nothing she could do about it. And then when we discovered these genes, people started to find out they had these mutations. And in my own family, we discovered we had the mutation in the mid-2000s, in 2004. And at that time, I actually could do something about it, and I could save my life.
Most people, Theo, I would imagine very few people listening to this conversation haven't had a relative somewhere diagnosed with cancer. That's not to say that that always means that you're at greater risk. Can you talk about the red flags that say that you may have, you may be part of a family that has inherited forms of cancer as opposed to those that just sort of come out of nowhere?
Well, if somebody has cancer that normally happens in the 50s or the 60s in terms of age, and it happens in their 30s. Mm-hmm. That suggests that they've had a head start. So maybe they have a gene that's broken and they just need one more broken and they'll get cancer. So early onset, the same kind of cancer running throughout multiple generations and multiple members of the family. Breast cancer, ovarian cancer is if anybody in your family has ovarian cancer, it's a ticket to genetic testing nowadays. There are multiple genes now, not just BRCA1, not just BRCA2, that are considered genes when broken that would put you at risk for ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer, adrenal cancer. I could go on and on, but there are multiple syndromes that we now look at. And if you have a question, seeing a genetic counselor through a referral or just finding a genetic counselor, they come from heaven and they will help you figure that out.
What happens at an appointment with a genetic counselor?
The genetic counselor will start drawing your family tree for you. Before that, they'll probably ask you to fill out some information about family cancers and families, your family, whether they have cancers in them, what those are, try to verify whether they're true or not. And then they'll sit down with you and go through the pedigree they've drawn with you and talk about whether or not they think you have a syndrome that they can test for.
When you say find out whether they're true or not, that took me by surprise reading this book. I would think that, when you know that, Aunt Gladys had this kind of cancer, you can trust that information. But it turns out to be more complicated in a lot of families, and not necessarily because people are deliberately lying.
Correct. Memory is not the same as truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and especially lung cancer is a good one. Lung cancer in the past and still now is frequently metastatic. So it'll set up a home in multiple organs, and people will say, well, it was liver cancer, or they'll say it was adrenal cancer. In reality, it was smoking-induced lung cancer. Breast cancer is a little bit more reliable, and there have been multiple studies published on this showing that if you go back and you look at the records, and sometimes the records are wrong, but if you look at the death records or the Medicare records, other records, you'll find that what families report are incorrect. In my own family, our mutation we thought came from my father's side. It's a Jewish mutation in BRCA1. We thought it came from my father's side because we have very good records that they had certain cancers. Now, we're not exactly certain whether one was an ovarian cancer or an endometrial cancer, whether the adrenal cancer was the adrenal cancer or a lung cancer, but we had a lot of cancer. So we thought it came from my father's side. And the reality is it came from my mother's side. And that was a mystery that we uncovered. It was kind of an interesting mystery. And on her side of the family, it doesn't look like there's a lot of cancer. But there's a lot of politics associated with cancer secrecy in the family, and I suspect some cancers existed that just weren't discussed.
So you mentioned that you carry a mutation that is associated with the Ashkenazi Jewish population, a greater risk.
Yes.
Why are certain ethnic groups who may be scattered all over the world, mm-hmm. eating different diets, mm-hmm. living in different environments, susceptible at a greater rate than other people in the population?
Well, there are. It depends on what the mutation is, but like in the Ashkenazi Jewish population, they were isolated for a very long time, and so ultimately they married within each, families, and so there were founder mutations. And these mutations that put you at a high risk for cancer or Tay-Sachs disease or whatever the mutation we're talking about, it just runs through the population as long as it doesn't cause a lethal syndrome where you would just eliminate it.
And that BRCA, the BRCA1 and BRCA2, a lot of people may have heard of those and know that they're associated with breast cancer, and possibly they know that they're also associated with ovarian cancer. But that doesn't mean that men are off the hook.
No, men are not off the hook, and they're associated with other cancers, melanoma, pancreatic cancer, and now most recently prostate cancer is a big one that people talk about. And there's a drug called a PARP inhibitor drug that Laprib that was recently just approved by the FDA for men who have prostate cancer and have BRCA mutations. So it's pretty shocking that, we keep learning more and more and more about the old genes, and we're going to learn a lot more about the new genes that keep multiplying. We keep finding more and more genes as we sequence genomes. And so genetics is getting more and more complicated. So you need your genetic counselor.
So when you go to have genetic testing, if you and your doctor have determined that it's appropriate, the best possible outcome is that they say you do not have any genetic susceptibility to cancer greater than, the average member of the population. That doesn't necessarily mean you'll never get cancer, because there are cancers that don't have to do with mutations that get passed down.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. We think most cancer is a combination of environmental effects and bad luck, as they say.
Yeah.
But there are twin studies where they look at identical twins versus fraternal twins growing up in the same countries, the twins living together, and have found that about 33%, this is an estimation from, a Nordic trial, that about 33% of cancers are inherited. That means the rest are have inherited components. The rest are just bad luck.
So some of these things really do hang over people's lives, right? If they've lost a parent at a young age, if they've lost a sibling, and there mm-hmm. are people who think, well, if this is going to happen to me, I can't do anything about it, and so I just don't want to know.
Right. That is true. So a lot of people fail to track down their genetic inheritance because they can't see the upside. They can't see how life could be better. But the reality is that it's probably one of the best health tools we have for a better life. It can save your life, save my life.
Would you mind telling us a little bit about your story and the choices that you had to make?
Sure. So when I found out that I had a BRCA1 mutation, my genetic counselor said, we can watch you, or we can take out the organs that are at risk.
Let me interrupt. This is what is thought to have caused the cancer that killed your sister.
Yes. So we assume she had that mutation. We actually didn't have DNA from her, but we assume she had that mutation. My mother had that mutation. Interestingly, my mother didn't get breast cancer until her 70s. So that's another area of interesting science of how do you get not get cancer when you got one of these mutations. When I found out I had the mutation, it had been a long time, and I'd seen my sister go through this terrible experience. I'd seen her kids live with not having her around. And so for me, it was quite an easy decision to do the most drastic thing, which Angelina Jolie did. So mm-hmm. I can say I'm in that group. She and I have had mastectomies and oophorectomies, so took out those organs at risk. And so now my risk for breast cancer is probably lower than yours.
Now, on this side of it, it sounds like such an obvious thing to do. It makes perfect sense. I know that it wasn't something that you were able to say instantly, or maybe you were. Were you able to say instantly, I should do this, or what did you think about?
Well, the first thing I thought about when I found out we had the BRCA1 mutation, it's kind of embarrassing, but I was kind of excited because then I knew what it was that was happening.
Yeah.
And just that knowledge, it's interesting how you can go from uncertainty to instant understanding and the comfort that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty, an interesting reaction for me. And for me, the idea of doing these surgeries was also a very easy decision, again, because I'd been living with that thought of what am I going to do with this information and seeing patients go through this. So I think it was because of that experience, it was easier to make that decision. For some patients, they take their time. They'll have, you know, MRIs and mammograms and ultrasounds and CA125s and get tired of that, get tired of the worry, and then they'll go forth and have those prophylactic surgeries.
Mm-hmm. Is it important to get a second opinion to do a prophylactic before a prophylactic surgery, as important as, you know, when you're deciding how to treat disease that's actively present? In other words, when your one of your options is to have this prophylactic mm-hmm, surgery, mm-hmm. For patients who don't have the medical knowledge that you have, is it as important that they talk to multiple doctors, make sure this is the best course of action?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, a second, third, fourth opinion, always good. When making decisions, to get as much information as possible. You're a detective. You're trying to figure out what the right next thing to do is. So you get all the facts, put them together.
So if you determine that you have a mutation that could affect other people in your family, does your doctor have an ethical obligation to share that information with members of the family who might be directly affected but have chosen not to be tested?
That's a great question. What is the responsibility of the physician to notify family members about the mutation that might be running through the family? And the problem you have there is health information privacy.
Right.
So how do you do that? You talk to the patient in front of you that, you know, has a mutation and say, you know, here's a family letter. That's what we do. We'll give them a family letter, or we'll say, you know, we're happy to talk to them as long as you give us permission mm-hmm. and then try to test the rest of the family. It's a wonderful health tool. All of a sudden we found a mutation. Now we can tell people who are not at risk, they're not at risk. And those people who are at risk, you're at risk. And these are the things we can do for you to have a healthier, longer life.
We're speaking this hour with Dr. Theodora Ross, Professor of Internal Medicine and Director of the Cancer Genetics Program at UT Southwestern Medical Center. Her new book is called A Cancer in the Family, Take Control of Your Genetic Inheritance. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us now at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter. I'm at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now for the Doctor of Liberal Studies degree beginning in the fall of 2016. A customizable evening graduate program for working professionals. More at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Dr. Theodora Ross. She's professor of internal medicine and director of the cancer genetics program at UT Southwestern. Her new book is called A Cancer in the Family: Take Control of Your Genetic Inheritance. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Theo, there are some mutations associated with cancers that you can do something about in advance. There are others that you simply have to wait for, watch for. What do you do if you're diagnosed with a mutation that might lead to a cancer that you can't do anything about before it shows up?
Well, there are surveillance techniques, but as I said before, I think those are more difficult. So, for example, pancreatic cancer, if you have a gene that is predisposing you towards pancreatic cancer, it's pretty difficult to catch it earlier, although we have. Actually, at UT Southwestern, we're starting a pancreatic cancer prevention clinic that we're hoping to survey patients with ultrasounds, MRIs, to look at their pancreas before they get it, especially patients who are at risk. But if you are at risk for a cancer that you can't do anything about because of a gene mutation, the best bet is to be part of a study. If you think about the 90s, all the patients that didn't know they had these mutations, most of them were part of studies. We discovered the mutations. We still didn't know what to do, but they were part of more studies. And we did these surgeries or colonoscopies, other tests, and discovered things. So clearly, 20 years from now, things are going to be different for those patients who are at risk for cancers that right now we cannot prevent.
I would imagine it also, in maybe good ways and bad, it affects the way you live your life in the present. If you start out assuming that you've got 80 years that you can count on, and then you think, maybe I don't have this, maybe people want to know that simply to make choices that reflect that uncertainty.
Well, it's always good to be healthy. You know, limiting your alcohol and being fit can prolong your life. So these, and of course, not smoking. So you ask that question, these are things you can do that will prevent cancer, and there are a lot. I mean, if we all quit smoking, we'd have cured a lot of cancers.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Nancy on the phone in Dallas. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call. I have very similar situation to our speaker today. 15 years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I went through chemo. Following chemo, I had a genetic test because my mother died of breast cancer when she was 44. And to my surprise, I tested positive to BRCA1. She was the only person in our family that we know of who had cancer. And then I developed it when I was 42. So I went ahead and had the double mastectomy, the reconstruction, the oophorectomy. And when I got my genetic results, I sent them immediately to my brother and my sister. My sister went ahead and had the genetic test immediately. But my brother refuses to get tested because his comment to me is, well, what am I going to do with the results? And he has three daughters. One is in her mid to late 20s, who's about to get married. Another one is in college, and then the third one is in high school. And his wife also has a sister who is diagnosed with breast cancer. And whenever I see my oncologist, she has asked me if I have gone ahead and contacted my nieces. I guess she feels, and so do I, I've got a responsibility to them, but I know if I did this, it would cause a huge rift in our family.
Do you have any thoughts about that, Theo?
A very complicated situation, very interesting. And, you know, your brother is at risk for prostate cancer if he has the mutation, but we don't know that he has the mutation, correct, Nancy?
He won't get tested.
So without knowing whether he has the mutation, you know, your nieces are at risk. And so it would be great for them to know about that. And so then the question is, so you look at the family and you have to start thinking about benevolent manipulation here. And you have to think about who in the family might be able to get to your brother. somebody who's close to him who could communicate that this could be very serious, that and that if he could find out whether or not he was a mutant or his or carried the mutation, as some people say, or could just have his kids know and they can test for themselves, that would be great. So the question really is, who in your family could talk to him? That's you know, it's a psychological thing. There's all this, these issues about secrecy in the family. So it's hard for me to know without knowing your whole family, but these are issues that people face all the time. And the fact that your family didn't, you know, you didn't have that much family history of this doesn't mean it didn't exist. We didn't talk about cancer in the 60s and the 70s. And so if somebody had cancer and they survived it, they probably never, you probably never knew.
Of course, there are also people who were adopted or have, you know, alternative family situations, and they would like to know, but
yes,
they don't have that information. What can a genetic counselor do for somebody who feels perfectly healthy but has no earthly idea?
That's a great question. And, you know, as we're sequencing more and more genomes, some people may decide, I just want to get sequenced. And, you know, you can pay for that and get that done. And it doesn't mean that when you have a negative test, you're free and clear. This genetic testing thing continues to evolve, and so people need to know to go back to their genetic counselor. If you're adopted, you can try to find your bio family, and people are doing that more and more and discovering more and more things. Quite interesting. But really, the reality is it's very tough when you don't know your family history. And that is a real hard nut to crack. And that's huge in genetics. That's why genetic counselors are so good, because they can tease this out. They can find this information. And they are the reason we know things. Because if you don't have the, we call it the phenotype of the family, if you don't, can't describe the patient, then whatever the genome says is just garbage. We can't understand it. So telling us what, it's like you can look at a mouse that has a mutation, and if you can't tell that the mouse is abnormal because you don't know what a normal mouse looks like, you can't figure out whether that that gene you've mutated means anything to the mouse, if that makes sense.
Is there any value to those consumer-grade tests, which, you know, 23andMe stopped giving out health information, but people who had it several years ago have a list of, you know, conditions that they might be more at risk for?
Good question. You know, these direct, we call those direct-to-consumer tests. So you can just buy them in the grocery store. I don't know if you can buy them in the grocery store, but you can get them online. You spit in a tube and you send it to the lab, and then they come back to you with a report, 30-page report. They're just looking at little things called SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms. And when those usually come to us in our genetics clinic, we cannot interpret them, and we usually put them in the trash.
because they're not accurate?
Because the reality is, yes. I mean, they don't really. So there's been a lot written about this. There have been some journalists who've gone and taken more than one of these from different places and gotten completely different results. They're not, there's no regulation of those. You know, every once in a while, a patient has found a mutation and gone to their genetic counselor, who's then gotten a real test, a clinical test, to validate that. 23andMe can do some clinical tests now. They're only just carrier tests. The FDA has approved those. So those, because the FDA has come in and looked at those and give them the seal of approval, you know, that's okay. These are carrier tests for things like cystic fibrosis and Tay-Sachs disease, all for if you're family planning, nothing about disease predisposition. So none of these can tell you anything about disease predisposition without a genetic counselor.
We have a tweet here from Allison who wants to know if insurance companies cover mastectomies and reconstructions in cases in which a patient discovers they have a cancer-linked mutation.
Yes.
All right. Simple as that. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Milton in Fort Worth. Hi, Milton.
Hi. I had a question regarding autoimmune disorders, family-related autoimmune disorders, and cancer that is related or happens because of that. And the example I use is my sister just died last month of leukemia. And for the last 20 years, she was being treated for a form of a blood disorder. I think it's related to like hemochromatosis or some it was mm-hmm. she was genetically tested, and it morphed into, my understanding, finally into leukemia,
mm-hmm.
and that ended that. And we both inherited the HLA-B27,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I also ended up with another disorder which caused me to have a greatly increased chance of getting male breast cancer.
Well, Milton, I'm really sorry for your loss. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thea, what advice would you have for someone in his position?
So the HLA-B27, which you mentioned, causes an autoimmune syndrome that unfortunately your sister was struggling with, and sounds like you've had that as well. I don't know what your breast cancer susceptibility syndrome is that you're describing. Is it BRCA2?
No, it's actually something called Klinefelter's.
Okay, of course. You know, I don't know what your question is other than, you know, these autoimmune disorders that predispose to lymphomas, which I think probably morphed into a leukemia and caused your sister's death. And I'm only making guesses here since I don't have the records. Are very interesting because the whole immune system interaction with tumors and our ability to now put the brakes on or to release the brakes on the immune system so it can fight the tumor can go both ways. And I think what you saw here was that issue. It's a natural experiment by Mother Nature, who can sometimes be a not such a nice person. So I'm sorry about that. But I'm not sure what your question is, and I've kind of gone off on a tangent.
All right. Did you have a specific question, Milton, or did you just want to sort of...
Is there a connection between autoimmune disorders and cancer?
Yes, that's the great question. As I said, definitely for things like lymphoma, yes, there is. More solid tumors, the evidence there is not there.
What does it mean to have a tumor genetically sequenced, and how can that contribute to decisions made about how to treat a patient for a cancer?
Well, there are some genes that, when mutated in a unlucky sense, like you don't have it in your germline, you haven't inherited that mutation, it just happens in your skin or it just happens in your lung, those mutations can be targeted. So those mutations, the most famous one is BCR-ABL in a kind of chronic leukemia. That's kind of the poster child for sequencing a gene in a tumor to find out if it's bad and then targeting it with a drug. And imatinib is that drug we're talking about. Sequencing the whole genome at this point is still an idea. Sequencing 400 genes is still an idea as to whether or not that will be useful for treating patients. But there are specific genes that we do sequence routinely. EGF receptor in lung cancers we look at. ALK we look at. So I can give you a list of genes. But sequencing the whole genome of a tumor is still in investigational phases.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. Let's go on the phone now to Pushpa in Dallas. Hi, Pushpa.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
My question to Dr. Theodora Ross is, I'm a big, I read the book Biology of Belief, Dr. Bruce Lipton, and I also know that Dr. Bruce Lipton was consulted by Angelina Jolie before she went into the mastectomy. And Dr. Bruce Lipton had a very powerful point saying, whatever is in the gene that we get from our, you know, inheritance, it is there, but it expresses itself only when the body or the person is experiencing a scenario, the outside environment that is conducive for its expression. So if we can if the environment where we are, if we do not have that surrounding, we are not going to express it. So don't you think it's too aggressive to go and chop off like Angelina chopped off her breast? And I actually happened to have watched a link where Dr. Bruce Lipton was talking to Angelina Jolie saying, I cannot advise you not to do it because you have a fear of that expression, and that can be true for you, and I will not be, I will not advise you on that, but...
Well, let me jump in there, Pushpa. Thank you very much. I think we have the nature of your question. Can you comment on that, Thea?
Yes, great question. It does seem barbaric to, just take off a breast or remove ovaries or take out a pancreas. Sometimes people have their pancreases removed if they have a really high risk for pancreatic cancer. And it's the pros and cons. So based on our predictions of the chance that a patient will get the cancer they're at risk for. So, for example, Angelina Jolie has a very strong family history of ovarian and breast cancer. And because of that family history combined with her mutation, she wrote that she was at an 87% chance of getting breast cancer. That's a very high chance. The reason she doesn't have 100% chance is exactly what you said. Something else has to happen. The other chromosome that has the normal BRCA1 on it has to have a mutation in that BRCA1 for it to express, to get the cancer as a result of the mutation she has. And so that could come from radiation, just normal radiation of living. It could come from some other risk that we don't know about that causes mutations in DNA that's environmental. So it's a very good question. I think when the risk is that high, we can prevent cancer in these patients. There are studies, many studies now, showing that prophylactic surgeries for patients with mutations that cause that high a risk do reduce their risk and do save their lives, reducing the risk 95 to 98% depending on the study. So it's pretty shocking data, but it's a great question. I think it's the level of risk we're talking.
We're speaking this hour with Dr. Theodora Ross, who is director of the Cancer Genetics Program at UT Southwestern Medical Center and also professor of internal medicine. Her new book is called A Cancer in the Family: Take Control of Your Genetic Inheritance. Join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies Program. You can apply now to design your own doctoral or master's degree at SMU, specializing in organizational dynamics, human rights, and more. Details at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with the author of A Cancer in the Family: Take Control of Your Genetic Inheritance. Dr. Theodora Ross is professor of internal medicine and director of the Cancer Genetics Program at UT Southwestern Medical Center. We have an email here from Haley who says, after my BRCA1 discovery in 2012, I had my mastectomy and reconstruction in 2013 at UT Southwestern at age 22. Being that I'm young and single, I was wondering what you feel the possibilities are for ensuring I don't carry the gene on to, or pass the gene on, I think she means, to any potential children. I don't feel I could leave it up to chance. Ideally, I'd like to adopt or do IVF. Are there alternative efforts for those like me who feel obligated to stop the mutation with them?
That's a really interesting question.
It is.
And there's a lot of, personal choices here that, I could never imagine making. Adoption is good. Kids need parents who need to be adopted, who are adoptees.
Could the mutation be detected in IVF?
Yes, you can. And you can do pre-implantation genetic diagnoses and select against that mutation. We don't know a lot about what else these mutations, these mutations have been passed along, so they're not causing bad things otherwise, and it is an adult disease. And so that brings up the issue of, would you want to select against that? These are questions people have. I'm not an ethicist, but people can make these choices. The science is there. It's done. And so that can be done.
Let me ask you this, because I know that you've sort of seen your patients go through this. people can make a decision. Adults have every right to make decisions about their own health. Often the people who love them, who may have their best intentions in mind, still will disagree with the choices they make. How do you encourage patients to sort of, acknowledge that, mm-hmm. but also mm-hmm. do what they feel is right?
That's a good question. It's a tough one for some families in some cultures, or some cultures where prophylactic surgeries are just the husbands don't want them to be done, that kind of thing. And they have to acknowledge that that exists. That's what somebody's been indoctrinated, or that's what they think, that's what they feel. But still, you have to be strong and think about your life and what do you want. And you go through the decision-making process, and you're making decisions with, limited information. You don't know what the other side is going to be. And so I think, after you go through your process of decision-making, you talk to people, you get all the information you can get, you just have to make that decision and jump off and do it. It'll be fine.
We have another email here, this one from Meredith in Plano, who says, my mom had breast cancer and my aunt died from ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. I know at least my mom was BRCA negative. Mm-hmm. I'm in my late 20s. Is it too early for me to start testing?
No. I think, with that family history that you describe, is it Meredith? Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
the
Meredith.
Family history. There are other genes now, and just because she was BRCA negative doesn't mean that there isn't another gene in the family that is broken running through the family that you may have inherited. And so it's worth talking to a genetic counselor who will walk you through all of that and help you figure out what to do next. But you're not done.
When people say start testing, I mean, does genetic counseling typically happen once and then you are aware of everything that you need to know, or do you go back every couple of years?
We used to think that. I used to think that. I thought, we don't need genetic counselors. We just have BRCA1, BRCA2, the Lynch syndrome genes, the Lee and Fermini, and that was it. But now, as we've been sequencing more and more genomes, the genes that are implicated in cancer syndromes are multiplying like flies, and so the world is changing constantly. So I think you're... Genetic analysis, genetic testing is a process, and it's no longer an event. So checking in with your genetic counselor, checking in with your primary care doctor, checking in with your oncologist if you have cancer once a year and saying, what's new? Do I need updated testing? Is a good thing, too.
So there aren't more genes associated. There aren't more genes causing cancer. There are more genes that we understand.
There are more that we understand. There's 20,000 genes in the genome. We know something about 4,000. So we're really embryonic here.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Aisha in Dallas. Hi, Aisha.
Hi, dear. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. So my question to the doctor is, my mother at the age of 66 had a cancer of the thyroid. It was called the anaplastic carcinoma of the thyroid. Mm. It is one of the very rare mm-hmm. thyroid cancers, but definitely a very aggressive and very fatal cancer. It had already metastasized everywhere mm-hmm. when she presented herself with the nodule on the thyroid. And mm-hmm. the only surgery that could be done at that point was just to debulk the thyroid so that she doesn't die from asphyxia mm-hmm. or choking mm-hmm. of her throat. So my question is that because it is a rare tumor, the anaplastic carcinoma of thyroid, we have 5 siblings. Should we be tested or go for genetic counseling?
That's a really great question. Anaplastic thyroid cancer is one of those rare cancers. Usually thyroid cancer is not something that metastasizes and causes the situation that you just described. In terms of genetics, we don't have a genetic syndrome that we know of associated with that, but that doesn't mean that's not going to happen in the future. And like you said, it's a rare cancer. And so I do think participating in research studies would be probably the next step. And the way to do that is to talk to your doctor and say, hey, this was a rare tumor. What should I do from a genetic point of view? And I'm sure they can help you with that.
When you say participate in research studies, mm-hmm. do you need to find a doctor that is like associated with a medical center as opposed to, lots of people just have a doctor they've been going to for years that may just be in kind of independent practice?
I think it is good to go to a big center. Comprehensive cancer institutes have research ongoing for multiple cancer syndromes, multiple types of cancer. Have repositories where they can save your DNA, they can save your cells, they can save your serum. But there are a lot of doctors out in private practice who participate in these trials. And so asking your doctor and saying you want to participate in research, they will be able to help you find the right research study to participate in.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Lori in Garland. Hello, Lori.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Very well, thanks.
My question is, I had breast cancer in 06. I was diagnosed when I was 45. I had a lumpectomy, and I then later took the BRCA test, and it came back inconclusive. Mm-hmm. And that was like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I wanted to just go ahead and have a mastectomy, but, you know, double mastectomy, mm-hmm. because I just didn't want to take mm-hmm. any chances. And
sure.
I already had children, but I was talked out of it. And then when the BRCA test came back inconclusive, it's just always been in the back of my mind, like, do I just... They didn't want me to retake it at the time. They said there was no reason to do it.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. What kind of direction can you give me on that?
Well, 10 years ago, we didn't know as much as we know now today. And we have multiple other genes that we test for, as well as updated BRCA1 and BRCA2 testing. So they're, you know, always... You know, looking more at different kinds of mutations in those genes that we didn't know before. So I think the most important thing for you to do is to get a reanalysis of your genetics, and you can do that by just seeing a genetic counselor or talking to who tested you before. And I don't know who that was.
What is involved? Is it a saliva test with a genetic counselor? Do you give blood samples? What kind of tissue is necessary?
You can do either. If we're going to be doing these multiple genes, we usually like to take blood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good because we can take an extra tube, put it into a repository for research. So that's always something we like to do at UT Southwestern.
Are doctors everywhere prepared to interpret the results that come back from your genetic counselor? Do you need, you know, to sort of make sure that your doctor is up on what the genes might mean?
That's a great question. So, you know, genetics is a very difficult topic, not just for lay people to understand, but also for us doctors, even for scientists. It's a funny area where just getting your head around genetics is difficult. And so I think, and as the genes have been multiplying, it's getting more and more complicated. So I don't think we can expect our physicians out in the, you know, just our primary care physicians or even our oncologists to completely understand that. And so a genetic counselor, again, I keep repeating that, is important to see, or a genetic specialist. And that's an area, it's, you know, there's so much more going on, there is a supply and demand issue with genetic counselors. So get in with your genetic counselor now, because it may be harder in the future.
We have an email here from Jerry who wants to know if a family member's test, and I'm assuming this is for a cancer-related mutation, is negative, would it hold true that other family members are most likely negative?
Depends on what the test is, but unlike, you know, 50-50 chance, you get one chromosome from mom, one chromosome from dad. If your family member got the right chromosome that wasn't mutated, then you may get the wrong one. So it's a 50-50 chance.
Let's see. We have a question here from Jan, who wants to know about enrolling in pancreatic cancer studies. Is there an ongoing study at UT Southwestern?
I can't answer that question specifically.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We do, like I said, we have this pancreatic cancer prevention clinic that we're starting, and we're hoping to have multiple studies ongoing through that. So I really hope you come to that clinic. It's just starting up. It's led by Dr. Minter.
What do you find within families when people sort of fear that there's, you know, a family history? There are some families that, you know, might have had a couple of cases of cancer, but they're not inherited cancers necessarily. They're not mutations associated with those. I mean, I guess all cancer starts with a mutation, but how often are people able to be reassured by undergoing these tests?
I think if you get a really accurate family history and you're one of those odd families that have no cancer in the family and they exist, and then you can feel pretty good that if you live a nice, clean life without drinking and smoking and exposing yourself to radiation, then you can be pretty well assured.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think it's good to look at your family history and try to understand it and say, are there risks here? And let me see what I can do.
Is there an age after which the development of cancer is typically not about an unusual gene that's inherited within the family? Like you mentioned that your mother didn't get cancer until she was in her 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after a certain age, might we all get cancer, but it's not because we're more
Yes.
They have different mutations.
That is really true. In fact, you know, my mom, Grammy, had a breast cancer, and she has the BRCA1 mutation. But that doesn't mean the BRCA1 mutation was the thing that caused her breast cancer, because she had a garden variety breast cancer. She had the kind that had an estrogen receptor and a progesterone receptor. It was well differentiated, had a lumpectomy. You know, she did just fine. She's fine now. She has no cancer. She's got the mutation, too. Yeah. That sorting all that out is difficult, and we can never be sure whether it's a genetic cancer or an inherited cancer or just a bad luck cancer.
A point you make in the book, as people sort of go forward and start documenting family history in a more robust way than many of us may have, you say don't just ask about the things you don't know, because you might be assuming things that aren't true about what you think you do know about your family's medical history.
Oh, yes, for sure, for sure. You know, everybody in my family was, you know, half of my family sure that my Uncle Jack had adrenal cancer. But then I started asking around, and all of a sudden, you know, I wasn't so sure. Other people had different opinions. So I think asking around, getting, you know, different reports from different family members will shed some doubt on things or may confirm that your family history is accurate. Also getting things from the hospitals. And finally, you know, in the past, we had paper records. Most records were thrown away at 10 years. Now we have the medical record, the electronic medical record. And on this front, the electronic medical record, if done right, will cure cancer, because we'll improve our family histories, we'll improve our health histories in terms of their accuracy, and we'll be able to understand our patients better and then connect that with their genetics and their other tests.
How have other members of your family responded to the elevated risk that runs in your bloodline?
I think they all were used to that. I thought it was very interesting. My niece, my sister's daughter, is very cute. You know, and when she got tested, she decided she wanted to get tested at age 18. Mm-hmm. And so when she got tested, she told me that this was just the worst experience of her life, you know. And I had thought, you know, she did turn out to be positive, and I was ready to tell her, you know, that she would be fine if she just did what she needed to do to be surveyed and pay attention and all that. Oh, I know. The worst part for her was having the blood draw. And so I asked her later. So she told me this, you know, maybe 10 years ago now. And I asked her just recently about that, you know, really, you know, she said, I knew all my life I was going to have the mutation because my mom died of it. Now, she was wrong, because she had a 50-50 chance of inheriting that mutation from her mom. Mm-hmm. But she just knew. So she's very comfortable with it because she'd lived with it so long. So I think that's what happens. So I think everybody's very comfortable. There was very little drama because people were used to this. I mean, they were not used to it when my sister was diagnosed. That came out of left field, and they were shocked that somebody in our family could die that early. That was the first one.
Dr. Theodore Ross is professor of internal medicine and director of the cancer genetics program at the Harold C. Simmons Comprehensive Cancer Center at UT Southwestern Medical Center. Her new book is called A Cancer in the Family: Take Control of Your Genetic Inheritance. Theo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy, with help on the phones today from Alex Smith. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.